Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's toy department time, everybody. A pre-Super Bowl toy department.
Yeah.
I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And you were in the eye of the storm, huh? Over there in San Francisco of Super Bowl fever.
I suppose I am.
Was there any talk of sending you to Miami to do the Radio Row thing this year or anything like that?
Well, no, primarily because the afternoon drive in the Bay Area would be the time when everybody in Miami was out eating dinner and going to parties.
Right.
So it wouldn't have been worth a whole lot to be there.
It would have been great if you could do your show live from some party. That would have been with just all this thumping bass music in the background and just trying to corral people in VIP areas. That would have been fantastic.
Totally. Generally, radio is really good with thumping bass in the background.
It's talk radio, especially.
Yeah, people love talk radio. People like to have their talk radio with a lot of noise interference.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's why they long for AM signals.
And I don't know if it is me and just general disdain for pregame hype or this city. And them getting knocked out of the playoffs and immediately kind of turning their eyes elsewhere. But it's easy to forget that there's a Super Bowl being played in 2 days.
Not for me, but is the city, what is the city looking at?
What are they looking at instead?
I hope it's not the basketball team.
It's a good question. I mean, the basketball team is a disaster.
Yeah.
I was going to just sort of reflexively say hockey, but I don't even honestly know if that's true. The hockey team's not all that good either right now. And the Gopher basketball team is middling. So
tough times in Minnesota.
I don't know. Maybe we're just looking up at the sky and waiting for the next pound of snow to fall.
Fair enough.
It's, or there's the whole impeachment thing that's happening somewhere else, which we don't need to get into.
Yeah, that's not in our department. That's
We will stay in the tour department today, and we actually do have a lot of stuff to discuss. And then at the end, I think we're going to try to roll in some Super Bowl prop bets, as is tradition on this podcast. So,
yes.
If you're a non-sports person, we'll get all your entertainment content up front. Where would you like to start? Throw it out to you.
Let's start with Aaron Hernandez, because it's been a while since you watched that.
It has been a while since I watched that, and it is sort of football-themed. A lot of talk about this Aaron Hernandez documentary. And as two people with some background in sports and me being University of Florida fan, I felt like I knew a lot about this story going in. I learned a few things that I didn't know before, but maybe not enough for my liking in a 3-part documentary. What'd you think?
I think that's right. I probably learned more than you did. It was an awful lot of, I don't know. I don't want to call it slow, but in terms of new information, it was slow.
Yeah.
It was not like a boring documentary, and it was pretty clearly made for people who are not football fans and weren't as aware of what happened here as we might have been.
Yeah, no, it seems like
it's clearly targeted towards Netflix audience as opposed to the Aaron Hernandez audience.
Yeah, the Netflix true crime audience. There's been a really big niche for murder stories, essentially, carved out in Netflix and the podcast world. And here's a famous person who did something kind of crazy. I think that's almost the fundamental problem with the Aaron Hernandez story as story is that, when you take a look and think about what this guy did, that he most likely committed a double murder and then just went on and played a season of football, like that's sort of insane. But Aaron Hernandez himself is not a particularly interesting or compelling figure, right?
Maybe not. I mean, I think the documentary asks some interesting questions about what might have been. And I think it's somewhat fair to do that. I think there are any number of points in Aaron Hernandez's life and any number of things that happened to or around him that if they had gone differently might have dictated a different outcome in the long term. His sexuality, his father dying, CTE. But it's hard to escape. And look, I don't want to say CTE has no effect on this. I think CTE probably definitely has an effect on what happened here.
To me, it's more likely than the theory that he did all this because he was closeted.
Well, I mean, I think it's like it's... Here's a man who either was a sociopath all along or at some point broke, just snapped. And if you want to believe that he is someone who just snapped, then I think all of those things come into play. CTE, his feeling like he needed to be closeted, his dad passing and his mom seeming to be kind of the worst. All that stuff factors in, but it's hard to escape the fact that of all the people, like, it's not a great thing to say, but I can guarantee that there's more than one person playing in the NFL right now with CTE who is also closeted. Like, that's 100%.
Yeah.
And no one's ever done anything like this.
Yeah.
And so at some point you just have to conclude that this is a very bad person who, yes, all these things happened to, and yes, that may have been part of turning him into a very bad person, but ultimately this is a very, very bad person who did very, very bad things for no apparent reason. And I'm not sure that is a compelling story for a documentary. I will say this. In the final episode, as they went through all the CTE stuff, I found myself thinking constantly of Antonio Brown.
You certainly crossed my mind.
And here's the thing.
As did Junior Seau, which obviously the documentary kind of gets into a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Seau and Dave Duerson and all those guys. But, I mean, I kept thinking about Antonio Brown because here's a guy who was a little weird and the best receiver in football, arguably, for 7-8 years, took a massive shot to the head and has been significantly more erratic since, to the point where he can't hold down a job that he is one of the best people in the world at. And he has been implicated in a number of legal issues and arrested at least once.
I mean, I think to the point where Drew Rosenhaus doesn't want to represent him.
Well, to the point where Drew Rosenhaus said he won't represent him until he gets help, which is to say no one's going to sign him unless he gets help.
Right.
And because Drew Rosenhaus doesn't care about anybody. So
that's what I mean. I mean, Drew Rosenhaus was there through all the TO histrionics.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, look, Antonio Brown may just be kind of a dick. But he also might be suffering from traumatic brain trauma or brain injury. And the fact that we can't diagnose it and the fact that the majority of people seem more than happy to just say, whatever, he's a kook, get him out of here. It makes me super uncomfortable. And it really – football is messed up, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's – look, there's no – you can – cover up sort of that truth, or you can kind of shy away from that truth, but it's still there. You know what I mean?
And you don't want to let a guy off the hook for being a bad person or being a dick because he might have, and that's the problem with not knowing.
Right. And I look, you're still, at some point, disease or no, you're still responsible for your actions, right? You know?
Yeah, except that, you know, we legally declare people not responsible for their actions for any number of mental issues.
Not responsible, right? Like, there are mitigating things, right? If you are...
You can be declared not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right, but there's still consequences for being not guilty by reason of insanity. It's not like it's, hey, you're not guilty by reason of insanity, and then you go home, right? Like, you go to a mental institution after.
You go to the doctor.
After
you know? And that's a big difference. Like, the doctor and jail are very different places.
Indeed.
I don't know. And look, there's no conclusion here, unfortunately, for me to draw, except that this all makes me uncomfortable.
Can we jump to that a little bit? Because it does also seem like this doc shies away generally from making a conclusion about much, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know what the conclusion would necessarily be or whether they're in a position to make it, but it almost feels a little incomplete to me. And I also sort of wonder if there's maybe a more interesting story about the woman who stood by this very bad person who did very bad things.
I'm shocked and there was no sort of denouement.
Yeah. No, and that,
like, he's been dead a while now. Where is Cheyenne Jenkins?
Yeah. I would have to assume that they tried to ask these questions of her and just failed. But
right. But it almost seems like you should have held it till you could get that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I'm not like I'll never get this time back. I don't. The documentary is fine.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be among, to me, the great true crime docs of this century or anything.
No, but I you know, as you say that, I think this also suffers from context because we've watched a lot of really incredible documentaries in the last couple
of years. It's a good time for documentaries, but hey, step up your game, man.
Yeah, agreed.
I would say that's actually a theme for a lot of things this week. Can we go to Nora from Queens?
Really? 'Cause I feel like some of the things I'm just going to say quit the game altogether.
Well, so I feel like Nora from Queens is a step up your game situation.
No.
No?
Disagree. No. Tell me what about this show is worth keeping.
Awkwafina.
Yeah, in the world. I don't want her out of the public eye, but there's nothing about this show.
I'm going to agree with whatever you're about to say, and I apologize for interrupting, but don't think that building a series around Awkwafina and her early struggles in trying to make it, like, it'd be a compelling thing? Like, the pitch here is fine. Just the show is bad. It's really bad.
If there was a pitch that involved something meaningful about her struggles to make it, or something funny about her struggles to make it, but her living with her, like, grandma and everybody making literally the easiest, worst jokes you could think of, I feel like we could have written this episode in 5 minutes.
Yeah. I
feel like it would have taken less time to write this episode than the airtime of the episode.
Yeah, you know, and I watched the second episode largely because I wanted to go to give it the benefit of the doubt of, okay, you know, maybe we had a bad pilot. Like, that happens, right?
Sure.
And the second one is not much better. The plot of the second one is about Nora going on a trip to Atlantic City with her grandma. And there's a point where they get into, like, Chinese-Korean rivalries, you know, at the casino. And it did sort of make me go, well, hey, there's, like, maybe some interesting riffs on Chinese immigrant culture. Like, there's maybe a Rami-type show in here somewhere in theory. But the team assembled is not the team that could put that together. They're going for, like, Broad City. With less insight. And
well, that's the thing. Broad City was good because it was insightful, incisive, and clever.
Yeah.
This is none of those things in one episode, at least, and it sounds like not even in two.
Yeah, there's
even if at times there's the shell of something vaguely relevant or interesting, like, there's nothing to it. It's not here.
Yeah. Like, look, if a vibrator the size of your head is your idea of like a funny joke, then yeah, this is the show. But
See, I think that's like Broad City would have had that the vibrator the size of your head is just like the first of five parts of that setup.
Exactly. Right. That's the whole joke in this thing, right? It's like,
right.
I'm getting into bed.
Look, a giant vibrator.
Yeah. Okay. And look, this vibrator's so big. And here's a second one that's also big. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a disservice to Awkwafina to just have her doing that same, like, nah, thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not a good show.
And I feel bad because, like, I imagine if you're Awkwafina and someone's like, we're going to build a show around you, like, you're not turning that down.
No.
But this is just not good.
But you know what? Now she's Oscar nominated, Awkwafina. Or wait, she's not. Right. Was she Golden Globe nominated? Did she get an Oscar nomination? I don't remember. Maybe that was just the Globes. But she, like, won, right? She won a Golden Globe.
I don't know. She's great. Yeah. I have no problem with Awkwafina.
She got to be fine. This feels like something that, like, Comedy Central sat on for like a year and a half and went, oh, this isn't good. And then
she got bigger and they were like, we better put this out.
Yeah, we should put it out. I have no idea if that's the case. That's just sort of what it felt like. Cause they had to know it wasn't good, right?
I asked myself that question a lot. And it's one thing when it's, you know, a network TV show that, like, all right, This is trying to appeal to a billion people, so it's going to be broad and mediocre, but people are going to watch it. Like, I can't imagine anybody watching this and really getting into it.
Let's quickly move to Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
I'm just going to suspect that you liked this more than I did.
I have a feeling that this, like, we could probably take our Leslie Jones conversation from a week or two ago and play it again.
Wait, but I liked that one more than you did, didn't I? Or wait, no, was that wrong? You liked that one more than me?
You gave it like a B minus or a B.
Yeah.
And I said it was like a B plus or an A minus.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. All right.
And I feel like that's where we are here. This is not Tiffany Haddish's best work. It's not particularly insightful. But she's very funny. I laughed a lot. I'm okay with it. Maybe this one's more like, I think Leslie Jones might have been slightly more, I don't know.
This really is totally that same conversation. You laughed a lot, and I laughed less than you did.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, she's a funny lady.
Yeah, I still laughed.
And it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I have no beef with it. If you need an hour to kill, maybe you're stoned or something. Sure, yeah. Go for
this. This is as good a way to kill an hour with comedy as any.
But, like, you'll never think about it again.
Probably not. Yeah. Other than the fact that Tiffany Haddish had a bat mitzvah.
Correct. So I guess her father was Jewish? That was the one part I didn't know. I thought this is something that she converted to Sammy Davis Jr. style.
So did I. But I guess, yeah, she comes from Eritrean Jews, which is a thing.
Yeah. Also didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, Eritrea and Somalia, I think, and Ethiopia all had some Jews.
I mean, I think that I know many more Somalians than the average person. I haven't met a Jew yet, so
maybe I'm wrong about Somalia, but definitely Ethiopia and Eritrea.
Yeah, they seem to be pretty uniformly Muslim, from what I can tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a drastic minority in those places, but yeah. There's like a corner of African Jews that are, it's a well-established thing.
Okay. Since we're just rolling through quickly, I like the, how we're burning through stuff here.
Hammering.
I'm going to go kind of to the other side of this, like, coin of, like, watchable, maybe not memorable, and switches over to The Gentlemen. So I don't. Where are you at on the Guy Ritchie oeuvre?
I think it's mostly a story of decline, but I generally enjoy his films.
Okay, like, I am here for this, and what I think I realized is, like, these movies are my John Wick. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I'm don't get me wrong. This, I had a great time.
Yeah. I
don't know that this is as good as Snatch or Lockstock.
No, it's not as good as Snatch or Lockstock. No, but those are inspired.
It's that, and it's quite enjoyable.
Yeah, but I just want, give me in kind of in between the scenes of wanton stylized violence. Like, I want clever lines and plotting, even if the plotting doesn't totally make sense, and great outfits and cool bars. Like, charming actors wearing incredible clothes, you know, and making awesome dump. Like, the fake fight video in this thing that's supposed to be, I guess, like a parody.
Yeah.
And they actually show it. I don't know if you stuck around for the credits, but they show it kind of in full in the credits. That video is awesome. I'm like, I will watch that again. It's so great.
It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm just here for all of that. It's completely lightweight, and it doesn't mean anything. And and there's probably 7 twists more than necessary in the whole thing. But you know what? I am here for that. That is a good time at the movies to me.
I totally agree. When I say it's a story of decline, like, he has either been making pop stuff in his particular style that's pretty mediocre, or he's been trying to replicate his first 2 films, which were really quite delightful, and I'm not sure he's ever gotten there.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't have a great time at the theater.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again on the plane the other week. And, they're talking about the DiCaprio character goes to make movies for the second best spaghetti Western, filmmaker. And I feel like, Guy Ritchie's like a spaghetti Western Tarantino.
Yeah, except a lot less thoughtful.
That's kind of what I mean. You know what I mean? Right. Like, but that's okay. Like, I feel like there's a place for that. And I'm not, at the end of 100%. The year, this isn't going to be on my list of 20 great films, but like.
But it is, there is something more, maybe just because he's so specific and we only see it every so often. Because you only get this thing when Guy Ritchie makes this movie.
Yeah.
But there's something that's more delightful and charming than a lot of the big budget action stuff, which I like. I mean, I love John Wick and the Fast and Furious movies, but this is kind of a stylized step up.
Yeah, it's just more me. There are many very popular action franchises that I would rather watch Guy Ritchie do this than those movies. I would rather watch Guy Ritchie do this than watch another Mission Impossible movie. And I realize that puts me in the Eritrean Jew sized minority, but I'm okay with that. You know what I mean?
I'm not sure I disagree with that. Like, I like both, but I'm not sure I disagree with you there. Or comparing it to something like Fast and Furious or John Wick, I think there's something more exciting and these have a certain amount of momentum to the non-action stuff that those don't.
Yeah, and by the same token, if you said to me, not really into it, I got no argument for you.
Right.
I totally get why you wouldn't be into it.
There is not a great, educated defense of this movie if someone didn't love it. I think is an interesting, a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You can't really lay out a coherent, no, this is a good movie because argument. But also, if you can't enjoy it, I just kind of feel bad because it's delight.
It pushes my buttons. And I do want to make one special mention. I feel like in a movie with some really big movie stars, by the way, really nice to see Hugh Grant
do something different,
straying a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought he was exceptional.
Yeah. There are some, good actors doing cool things and whatever. But to me, the star of this movie was the wardrobe. And I had read a little bit, I'd seen the headline of an article that I went out of my way not to read because I knew we were doing this, that we're going to do it for the pod. But there was a lot of thought put into what each character was wearing based on sort of where they were on the sociological totem pole You know what I mean?
Yes.
But everybody. Yes, the tracksuits were on point, and like the suits were on point. Like McConaughey wore some incredible, like clearly like London made to measure suits. You know what I mean? And these,
yes, they bespoke. McConaughey was dressed in bespoke plaid for most of this, and it just, yeah, this film gets an A+ for sartorial excellence.
Yeah, yeah, like it would if this movie got an Oscar nomination for costuming. Like I would back that 100%. If that probably won't happen, but if it did, I'd be into it. I can't imagine anything else that would even be sniffing Oscar for though. So,
and that's part of the Guy Ritchie thing, right? Yeah. Is that's part. That's where he's Tarantino-esque. Is like you could freeze most frames of this film, and it's an interesting, somewhat artful painting.
Yep. Agreed.
You know, and there's only so many guys, Tarantino, Wes Anderson, who create such a specific look that like is just soaked throughout the whole movie. I think it's really very hard to do. It requires, I imagine, a remarkable amount of preparation and sort of forethought.
Yeah. And his was like also I felt like a really British take on that whole thing, too. Like it was, yes, a very specifically British sort of scenario.
When McConaughey walks into the bar and orders a beer and a pickled egg, and he's wearing a 3-piece plaid suit, it's just like, this could not be more British.
Yeah.
A pint and a pickled egg. Like, that has never been said in America.
I enjoy that. And Charlie Hunnam's house was also pretty great.
Oh, yeah. My God. And he was really good.
Yeah. Nice to see him being British.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's fun. To me, this is a fun world to hang out in for 2 hours, and yeah, I probably won't think about it too much anytime soon, but this is definitely the kind of movie that if I wander into it on cable in 5 years, if cable still exists.
If you pull up HBO and it's like, the Gentleman is newly streaming, you're going to be like, all right, yeah.
Yep, I'm in. all right, so that leaves one thing, and I think this is the thing that I think we actually will stand for a little bit, and that is season 2 of Shrill, which is streaming on Hulu now. That is the A.D. Bryant vehicle,
mm-hmm.
And we enjoyed season 1. I had watched, episode and a half of this. And I got a text from you about, hey, watch some more. So I'm going to jump out on a limb and say you were pretty into it.
Yes, I was. How much did you like season 1?
I liked season 1 quite a bit as I remember it. But I also, that's another one where it's like I'd kind of put it away for a while. It wasn't, uh-huh, you know, it's not a lot of episodes.
Right. I liked season 1 fine. I think this is better. I'm not sure I can tell you why.
I mean, didn't you feel like season 1, to me, like we liked it, but I feel like a lot of what we liked about it was the idea of like, hey, we're telling some stories that aren't told on TV that much. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And they're told in a smart way. And I think that, you know, it didn't lose that in season 2, but the show feels freer to also just be funny.
Yes. Maybe that's what it is. We now know these people a little better, and it's less work of telling us and introducing us to these characters we don't often see, and more just those characters living their hilarious lives.
Yeah.
And I have to say, in particular, the relationship between the lead character, Annie, and her goofy boyfriend, I just think is gold. It's comedy gold. And I don't quite know how it works, but it totally does. Like, these are both bizarre people who aren't necessarily funny people. Like the characters, the people are not that funny. They're just so weird.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted you to get through four is the dinner scene.
Oh, the See, like, I wrote down one scene, and I think it's in episode four, I believe, but it is not that scene.
Oh, which one?
I wrote down Lady Gaga karaoke scene.
Oh my god, that too. Oh my god, Fran singing Lady Gaga.
Yeah, just doing that song from A Star Is Born, and just like she's on one, and then just goes for it. Like I don't know why, but that killed me.
And she's super high.
Yes.
And in the middle of the song, like has a conversation with herself, and then jumps into the yelling portion of the song with full vigor. All the characters in this are, and you know what? Especially in light of what we just had to say about Nora from Queens, this is the opposite of Nora from Queens.
Yep.
The conceit. We built a show around 80 Bryant is far less appealing to me than we built a show around Awkwafina. Just, I'm way less interested.
Well,
I think Awkwafina is a lot funnier than 80 Bryant, like, in the world.
Yeah, well, and I mean, look, the clear difference to me when, you know, when you're comparing these two shows is, like, equally ridiculous things happen in both. Like, you know, the birthday party at the skating rink,
oh my god,
like was fundamentally ridiculous, and her boss like being in a K-hole in the middle of this like deep conversation, like all these things, they're insane, you know what I mean, like breaking open that vending or whatever, that claw machine, all of it, that's all stuff that would have happened on Nora. The difference is like Shrill never loses the grounding of like real emotion that's happening
in those
scenes.
Here, you just crystallized this perfectly for me. Shrill is a show built around a lady comedian where her life is completely insane and shambolic. Ridiculous things happen all the time. And Shrill asks the question, if these completely insane and ridiculous things happened in real life, how would people handle it? How would real people react? What would they say? How would they interact? And Nora from Queens has ridiculous things happen and then just stops.
Yeah, and then it's like the director, whoever directed that, was just told Awkwafina, like, all right, this happens, now go to 11. You know what I mean? Right?
And then okay, now let's move to the next ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
No, with no thought about. And you don't want to say reality because Shrill is far from reality, but it's real people at a certain level. It feels like real people. Even the absurd people feel like real people. And by the way, did you realize her boss is Hedwig?
I did, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I knew that from
John. I did not immediately recognize that.
Yeah, he's tough to miss, I feel like.
I never saw Hedwig. So
oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But he's great.
Yeah, he is great. That could easily be a ridiculous character, right? So
yes, or the crazy assistant who had the birthday party.
Yeah,
is a completely over the top ridiculous character, but she just adds like a layer of real emotion to it that makes it wonderful. I'm really impressed with the second season of this show.
In that scene in the skating rink, was that Katherine Hepburn that she's doing, or was it Joan Crawford where she's like, my party is ruined? She puts on the glasses. I don't know what that was a reference to exactly, but it just killed me.
Yeah, she is her whole thing is hilarious, and like I don't know. Every relationship in this show is funny and sort of thoughtful. There's just it's a more thoughtful comedy than certainly than Nora from Queens.
Yep. Okay. I think that pretty much takes us to prop bets if we're ready to talk about some Super Bowl stuff.
Yeah, baby.
Feels
good, baby.
First of all, I mean, look, it'd be a waste of your San Francisco 49er headquarters thing. Sorry, NFL Network's popping up to say some crap. Not to get your just take on the game in general, because this to me is one where no outcome would surprise me. A close win for either team, a blowout win for either team, I could see either.
I still agree with that. I'm going to pick the Niners to win. I think they are the better team on balance. But it's interesting because, to your point, like I do think it could potentially be a blowout in either direction. The difference being, if Kansas City somehow just exploded out of the gates and ran up the score, it would just be tough to imagine the Niners recovering. Whereas there's pretty much no lead at any point in this game where you'll be 100% confident if the Niners are in front, which feels like an edge for Kansas City. But I do think, like, if things play out more or less straightforward, the Niners are overall better, which should work for them. It's a tough thing to analyze in football, which is such an interconnected sport. Like, when two teams are pretty close, a lot of times you want to take the team with the better quarterback. And clearly that's Kansas City. On the other hand, I do think Garoppolo is capable, and I just think the Niners are as balanced a team as you'll see in the NFL at this point.
I've been informed that defense wins championships, and I can't remember where I heard that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the you know, that's sometimes true. But also, Kansas City's defense is a lot better than it has been in past years and even than it was early in the year. That said, it's a better pass defense than it is a run defense. And the Niners are awfully good at running the ball. So
it's true. But they also just kind of neutralized is the wrong word, because obviously scored two touchdowns at the beginning of the game. But they really held Derrick Henry in check, particularly in the second half. So, and Tennessee's offensive line is, you know, among the best in the game. So
it's better than the Niners. And it's just so hard to say, is that the product of Derrick Henry carrying the ball 90 times in 3 weeks? Was Derrick Henry slowing down on his own and Kansas City just helped? Or are they a much, much better run defense than we think?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of game script too. Like Derrick Henry, you can almost rule out the idea that it was just workload on Derrick Henry, because he just didn't get the ball that many times in the second half, because they were three and out a couple times, and then by the time they got it back again, they were way behind. So, who knows. And who knows if they'll be able to handle the Niners' rushing attack, which may not have a Derrick Henry, but I think is more schematically complex, you know?
And that's the other part. I think Kyle Shanahan is the smartest man on the field. And I think even when he had the worst roster on a weekly basis, he did things with scheme and approach that bamboozled people. So I mean, that's the reason I'm going to likely pick the Niners, but God, it's close.
Yeah.
And this really, here's what I really want. 'Cause yeah, I'm out here, but I'm not a Niner fan per se. And I'll be rooting for the Niners while the game is on, 'cause it's fun. And I do live in the Bay, but like, it's not going to affect my long-term emotions like it would if the Bears were there, you know? So what I really want is, like, nobody F this up. This ought to be one of the most entertaining and exciting Super Bowls of our lives. Let's not blow it, okay? Let's everybody play well. Let's all just play well.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I don't often go into a Super Bowl feeling that way. Usually I find a way to pick one team to really prefer. I do, again, like, I'll be rooting for the Niners, but, like, I'm going to be really annoyed if this game isn't great.
Yeah,
because it should be great. These are the teams I want to see.
That's mostly true for me, because the Patriots are usually in the Super Bowl, and that always gives you somebody to root against, right?
So, yeah, exactly. You root against the Patriots. You root for a team that doesn't get there that often, all that stuff. But these teams both feel like they deserve to be here. They both feel prepared. They both feel explosive and exciting, and it's just going to be a real bummer if the game sucks.
That is true. I'm excited for the chess match, the Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan chess match, because I agree with you that I think Shanahan will be the smartest guy in the field, but Andy Reid is real good at coaching offensive football. So,
yeah, they're, you know,
And I'd be happy for either coach, right? There's a real redemption narrative for whoever wins this game, right? Somebody will be redeemed come Sunday.
And I don't think there's much question that these are the two best offensive coaches in football.
Yeah.
Maybe the two best offensive coaches we've seen in 20 years.
Yeah. Well, only because Steve Sarkisian left the NFL.
Oh, good point. Yeah, and Lane Kiffin as well.
Right. All right. Well, it should be a fun game. Let's get into some props, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, now, if you really want it to be fun, let's spend some money.
Yeah. Do you want to start with, because I got props of all kinds here.
And just real quick, if you're going to bet the game, bet the Niner money line.
Bet the
like, you might as well get a little bonus.
Yeah, take that little.
Like plus 120 or something, but, you know, don't bet a plus one.
Well, what if you want to bet, like, what if you really think Kansas City's going to win? Do you lay the points or you take them on the money line?
Then lay the one.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
If you think Kansas City's going to win, lay the one. If you think the Niners are going to win, bet the money line. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Do you want to go goofy props or football props first?
Let's start football and get goofy.
All right. Will a player other than a QB take a direct snap? That yes is minus 150, no plus 110.
I would bet no.
I think I would also.
Now, that's a dodgy bet, but it's the sort of thing where if something is more or less 50-50, you just take the odds. Right? I mean, Kyle Shanahan or Andy Reid could do that. Probably less likely that Andy Reid would do it, but could Tyreek Hill take a direct snap? Could Raheem Mostert take a direct snap? Why not? I don't think I've seen either of them do it recently, though.
I feel like the Chiefs roll out the direct snap every once in a while, but you know what? I haven't been paying that much attention, so I think you're right. I think no is the safe bet there. Will a lineman catch a pass? And hold on, I just lost my catch a touchdown pass. Yes is plus 700.
I think there is a distinct possibility that Joe Staley gets a touchdown target if this game is going the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. See, to me, that's a value bet right there.
Joe Staley, I believe, has caught a pass in the NFL before. It has been a really long time. But especially if the Niners are kind of in control and near the end zone, and they've been running the hell out of the ball, a play action out route to the left tackle feels like the kind of trickeration Kyle Shanahan has had in his back pocket all year long.
I would agree with that. You know both of these coaches have saved some plays, right?
Oh, yeah, especially plays in the passing game and trick plays on the Niners side, because I guarantee there was stuff ready for the last 2 weeks that he never had to use.
Yep. How about first TD? Is there anybody like there? I mean, I can run through the odds for everybody, but it's probably better to just do players that you like for first TD.
I think your obvious top four.
And let me say, this is when we say first TD is person standing in the end zone when the ball crosses the line. So, you know, if it's a touchdown pass, it's not the quarterback that would get that. It's the receiver.
Which is why I would say your top four should be Mostert, Kittle, Kelsey, and Hill.
Those are four of the top five. Damon Williams is plus 650, along with Mostert, and then Hill's plus 750, and Kelsey's plus 800. George Kittle is plus 1,000.
Well, I think Kittle is pretty clearly your best value, but Tyreek Hill is not a bad value if you think the Niners will struggle to keep a lid on him, because I'd be shocked if the Chiefs don't take a shot deep to Tyreek Hill in the first quarter at some point.
Yeah. I mean, look, Debo plus 1,200 I kind of like. And then I think
not bad.
I actually think Patrick Mahomes with the legs.
Man.
If you're looking for high odds pick, that's I would think about that.
I got to say, I think the only way that happens is if they're on the goal line and it's a QB sneak.
Yeah, but I mean, that's certainly plausible. If you're just looking to throw $10 and turn it into something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough. But, boy, I don't think he's going to be scrambling like he did last time, 2 weeks ago. I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't see him I don't see him running for 100 yards in this game or something like that. But that doesn't mean he couldn't get into the end zone. You know what I mean? You couldn't see a scenario where it's, you know, third and goal from the three and he, you know, gets flushed out of the pocket and just tries to run for it. You know what I mean? Like that's in play if you're just talking about making a prop bet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's in play, but I think that's, especially in that compressed area, I think that's begging for Quan Alexander or Dre Greenlaw to take his head off.
All right. I may throw a little scratch at it. The over number for Mahomes passing yards is 299.5.
Man. Yeah, I think I go over on that.
I think I do too. And I kind of think I go over on Garoppolo at 240. 240 and a half, I should say.
That one is tougher. Because here's the thing. Like, Mahomes is throwing it a minimum of 30 times.
Right.
Garoppolo is throwing it anywhere from 7 to 40 times.
I guess what I'm just
depending on how the game goes.
What I'm saying is I don't see another game where he throws it 12 times. Like I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
I think even if they're winning, I think they're just going to feel the need to try something a little bit different, you know what I mean?
Well, that I don't think. I think Kyle Shanahan has shown he doesn't ever feel the need to try something a little different just for the sake of trying.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, right. Look, if, you know, if they come out and run the ball 6 or 7 times and march right down the field, he'll keep doing it. I'm not saying that, but yeah. I don't think it's going to happen is what I am saying.
Yeah. And again, I agree with you. It's just, I'm just saying Garoppolo could play really well and not get to 240.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's more of a hunch for me than a you should play this.
Yeah, to me, Mahomes is like, he's getting 300 even if he doesn't play great and the Chiefs lose. In fact, if the Chiefs are trailing, maybe there's even a better chance.
Yeah. All right, Raheem Mostert over 77.5 yards. Over under, rather. What do you like? Are you still there?
Sorry, I hit mute. Okay. I said some really interesting stuff.
I was like, man, you're really taking a long time to think about this one.
What I said was I would not touch that with a 10-foot pole because not unlike the Garoppolo thing, I think Mostert could have 10 carries for 75 yards and Tevin Coleman could have 15 for 100.
What's Coleman's health status in this game? Because last we saw him, he didn't look great. You know what
he
I mean, health-wise.
He dislocated his shoulder.
Yeah.
He's going to play. He was listed. So I didn't know this. Maybe it's new, or maybe I just haven't paid great attention, or maybe I forgot. Apparently, NFL teams have to issue an injury report last Friday as if they were playing last Sunday.
Oh, that's weird.
So Tevin Coleman was questionable on that. He has practiced, and he will definitely play.
Oh, yeah. If he's practiced, he's playing. Yeah.
That said, he did just dislocate a shoulder, and did you not see this was one of the best parts of the first week of Super Bowl hype. Did you not see what Kyle Shanahan said?
Nope. I've been out on Super Bowl hype.
So they asked Kyle Shanahan about Tevin Coleman early last week. I think it was Monday after the game. And, you know, because on the field they were like holding his elbow. You couldn't tell if he broke his arm or like what had happened. And Kyle was like, oh, yeah, it was a dislocated shoulder. But it was more like the Lethal Weapon dislocated shoulder where you just pop it back in.
Yeah.
He literally said that. So I guess they just popped it back in, got some MRIs, and then he was limited a bit and questionable. But I think he's participated in practice all week. He will definitely start, you know, be available at the start of the game.
I mean, that is the most iconic dislocated shoulder of all time, right? Like, anyone says dislocated shoulder, and my mind immediately goes to Lethal Weapon and him, like, popping it against a wall.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. There's an obvious difference between the shoulder dislocation that you can pop back in and the one that's, like, all messed up and needs surgery or something.
Yeah. We all have those people in our, like, romantic lives that, you know, we were with and whatever reason it didn't work out and we still wish we were with them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do we?
A little bit maybe, or not necessarily we wished we were with them, but we think back fondly and go, wouldn't mind having them around again. Tevin Coleman and Kyle Shanahan are certainly that in my football life.
Yeah.
Come back.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy.
Come back. All is forgiven. Let's give this another try.
Did you ever not? I mean, were you a like Shanahan choked guy?
No, I mean a little bit. If you're asking me, do I think Shanahan bears some responsibility for 28-3? I feel like that's almost undeniable.
No, that's different. He would tell you he bears some responsibility. I mean, of course he bears responsibility. Although Dan Quinn bears more responsibility, I would say, but. Yeah, I just mean, like, were you down on Shanahan after that?
No.
Yeah,
I mean, look, I understood he was probably going to get a head coaching job, and I don't fault the guy for leaving, but it was always, please don't go.
Right, okay.
you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, that's correct. That's the right way to handle it. You saw it in Atlanta, like, and it was maybe even harder to identify there because there were such good players all the time. But you could really tell, if you're a football fan who actually, you know, pays attention to the game, watching the two losing seasons in San Francisco, you could just see how much better he was at coaching than a lot of the people he went up against. And that's with terrible players for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whatever. I don't want to do the players who suck in the NFL thing. They're all great. But relatively speaking, they were outmatched every week. And he had guys running with nobody within 10 yards of them based on scheme design.
All right.
Then the quarterback would throw it at their feet or they'd drop it or whatever. But, like, you could just see Kyle Shanahan is the best at this.
Do you want to move into some non-football props?
I sure do.
Let's start with
some cross sports. Can I get some cross sports?
Yeah, I think I have something here. Hold on.
All right. You can wait. You can start somewhere else.
Well, no. Here we go. Okay. Which will be higher? Total touchdown passes in the game. This is -150. Total goals in Tottenham, Man City.
Oh, see, I don't know enough about Tottenham, Man City. I did watch Liverpool put a hurt on West Ham yesterday.
Yeah, Liverpool puts a hurt on everyone. No.
Liverpool, and then Ray Ratto, my radio partner, informed me that Liverpool is the best team going in anywhere.
Yes, no, they're clearly the best team in the world, and they are off to the best start of any team in any European league in history.
Yeah.
They have not lost, by the way, just so you know. The entire season, they have not
lost. Ray Ratto also told me that Arsenal once went undefeated.
That is true, and that is true. But
that's all I know.
They had more draws that year. Liverpool only has one tie. That is the only blemish on their record.
Okay, basically. Wow.
So, yeah, everything else will win. Yeah, they're destroying people at the moment.
Mo Salah, very good.
Yeah, he's very good. And a bunch of other guys, too. But anyway, I would say I think I would like I think total TD passes at -150 is the way I would go.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I do think this has the chance to be a very high-scoring game, and I would imagine if you get 5 touchdown passes – that's going to be tough to match. That said, not all touchdowns are passes, you know?
True.
And, like, it's just so hard. It's like fantasy football, right? It's like, do you want to bet on touchdown passes when they might just as easily get tackled at the 3 and run it in? It's just, it's tough.
Yep. Which will be higher? Patrick Mahomes passing TDs -200. Joker Oscar Awards +150.
Oh, God. I could never bet on the Joker, even though I'm afraid it will win.
I'm penciling Joker in for one award. Joaquin Phoenix for Best Actor.
You don't think it gets any, like, artsy ones?
The score is possible, right? I believe score won at the Golden Gloves. So maybe a two. But
yeah,
I still like Mahomes. Yeah.
You understand why he's favored, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Which will be higher? 49ers point total minus 190. Donald Trump total tweets on February 3rd, 2020. Is February 3rd the day of the game or the day after the game?
The day after. February 3rd is Monday.
Correct. But yes.
But that's the day before Super Tuesday, right?
Super Tuesday? Like the day with all the primaries? I don't know that that's true.
Or is it the day before the caucuses or something?
Let's see. I'm gonna look that up. Super Tuesday is March 3rd, 2020.
Oh, sorry. I was a month ahead. Yeah. So wait. So total
the it is the day of the Iowa caucus, February 3rd.
So it's tweets versus total points?
Total Niners points versus Trump tweets on the day of the Iowa caucus and the day after.
God, is he going to tweet 30-something times?
Trump tweets is plus 145. Niners are minus 190.
I'm realizing I don't know enough about how often he tweets. I mean, I know he tweets too much.
I know that he's gone over 50 in a day before. That's happened. He's gone over 50 in a day before. My guess, I feel like he tweets actually less on weekdays, but I could be wrong about that. That's just my feeling.
Wow. Man. I like Niners points. But maybe I'm playing with fire.
Yeah, I think I would roll with the odds there. I mean, not roll the, you know, I think I'd roll with the juice there, the plus 145 and roll with Trump.
Yeah. I mean, you might be right.
Okay, let's do the classic Gatorade bet.
Okay.
Lime, green, yellow, all in one category for this one. It's plus 175. I feel like green and yellow is value if you're getting both of those.
I hate that.
Red, pink, plus 250. Clear, 375. Blue, 400. Orange, 400. Purple, 500.
I think I would put money on both blue and red.
Yeah, I mean, I think with two red teams, red is a sneaky play here, I feel like.
But getting, would you say plus 400 for blue?
Yeah, and blue was the color last year. That's what Belichick got hit with.
Yeah, but the thing is, also, blue is the best Gatorade.
So, oh, no, red is the best Gatorade, dude.
No, don't be
and
ridiculous.
Then green, and then blue.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we've been doing a podcast for like 3 years.
Are you going to tell me that yellow is the best Starburst now?
No, yellow is obviously the worst Starburst.
Exactly.
Don't troll me, okay?
Okay.
Blue is obviously the best Gatorade. It's more refreshing and less like weird, nasty lemon taste than the other one. Oh, and red Gatorade is just fruit punch.
Yeah, fruit punch is awesome.
Fruit punch is fine. Blue Gatorade is uniquely delicious and refreshing. Everybody knows this.
This is a trash take from you.
Wow. 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 Yep. Is this the thing that finally splits us up?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I
this is the true red-blue divide in the United States.
Red is a good bet here. Red is a good bet because everyone thinks yellow Gatorade is the like main Gatorade, and that's horseshit.
Yep. All right, I'm going to throw two national anthem props at you.
Oh, boy. Who's doing it?
Demi Lovato.
Okay.
The over is 2 minutes and 1 second. Over is minus 175. Under is plus 135. 2 minutes and 1 second, also the time of last year's national anthem.
Which was Gaga?
Gladys Knight last year.
Oh, Jesus. I don't remember much.
So Vegas moved the line up because last year the line was 1 minute and 50 seconds.
Gosh, I think I'd go over.
I think I would, too. There's a reason those odds are so high there. You know what I mean?
I think Demi Lovato is going to milk this thing, man.
And I think,
feel like it's a slow starter, too. I feel like Demi Lovato is a slow starter national anthem.
Same odds over and under for the length of the word brave. And if your over is 5.5 seconds. How long does she hold that last note, essentially?
I'm going under. Under 5.5 seconds is a long note, man.
Plus 135. Yeah.
Five and a half seconds.
So you're over on the total, but under on the brave. I think that's interesting.
Ready? One, two, three, four, 5.5. That is a long brave.
Yeah, I think I'm over.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Will a John 316 banner be shown on television? No, minus 500. Yes, plus 300.
I wouldn't touch that. It is CBS, though, so probably, right?
Yeah. Here's the...
Definitely bet yes. There's no point...
No. It's Fox. It's Fox. Sorry.
Oh.
Buck and Aikman.
I would think Oh, God. I wouldn't bet that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I have some props on the broadcast.
There will be a John 316 somewhere in that stadium. Yeah. I don't know if it'll get on TV or not. Whether it's a sign or eye black or something. It's going to be there.
This is my lock prop bet of this whole segment. And I don't... frankly, I don't understand the odds, to be honest.
Okay.
I almost think this must be a misprint or something. Joe and Troy mention that Jimmy Garoppolo started with the Patriots? No is minus 140. Yes is plus 100.
Yeah, that's a clear yes.
I mean, right. I would bet yes at minus 500. I feel like. So, yeah. Like, I'm getting plus on that? Are you crazy? Will Joe and Troy say Patriots? Yes is minus 300.
Okay, well, that's... What?
Of course they're going to say
Patriots. Just say Patriots and not mention Garoppolo's
yeah,
career.
They're going to mention the Patriots in some non-Garoppolo content. I mean, look, I guess they're last year's winners. I guess it could come up in that way.
I'd be shocked if they don't mention
Will they mention – I like this one. Will they mention Andy Reid is a former punt pass kick champion? Yes is plus 150. No is minus 200.
I'm betting yes just for the fun, right? I mean – And then all game, you're rooting that they show big old 14-year-old Andy Reid next to that 8-year-old.
Yeah. I don't even know how to answer this one, but I'm going to say it anyway. How many commercials will be run during the broadcast? The over is 92.5. It's minus 125 for the over and minus 115 for the under.
I don't understand how you'd bet that.
And I don't know why you'd bet that, because then you have to count them.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed. No one wants to be taking notes on how many commercials aired.
All right, so we're going to do two more prop bets, and then we got to get out of here because we got to get out of here. all right, so halftime show. Here's my favorite of the halftime bets. Who will show cleavage during the halftime show? Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, minus 250. J-Lo only, Shakira only, are both plus 250, and neither is plus 550.
Man,
I feel like J-Lo's a lock. So the only question is if you're going with both or J-Lo only, and I feel like odds-wise it would make sense to go J-Lo only.
Isn't the sharp bet here neither? Because the NFL said no cleavage?
Maybe.
Because, I mean, here's the thing. The only way the answer is neither is if the NFL said no cleavage.
I just don't see him doing that. To be honest.
No.
Call me a square. I think the NFL wants the cleavage.
Yeah.
And I think J-Lo also
wants the cleavage.
By the way, I watched Hustlers on the plane the other day with the sound off, and it was still delightful. Yeah, delightful. Good with the sound on, too. We're very pro-Hustlers on this show. But, yeah. J-Lo. Cleavage. Yeah. Bet on it. That's all I'm saying.
What was both?
Both was minus 250.
Man.
That's why I feel like J-Lo only is just much better value.
You're probably right. J-Lo only is better value. But I don't know that Shakira feels like almost as much of a lock to me as J-Lo. Again, provided the NFL didn't ask or require certain types of outfits.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have been weird since the Janet Jackson thing, though. Like, you're right. On its face, you'd imagine, like, the NFL is very at home with cleavage. It feels like a place where cleavage is welcome. And yet, sometimes they're weirdly prude.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they let the cheerleaders wear cleavage. Okay.
Honestly, I'm just glad we spent that much time analyzing a cleavage bet.
Indeed. Indeed. All right, let's do MVP and get out of here. I mean, look, obviously your favorite is Patrick Mahomes. Depending anywhere from 110 plus 100 to plus 115, depending on where you bet.
Sucker bet.
And you can get Garoppolo for plus 200. Do you have a more off the board MVP?
Yes.
Okay.
I have as much an off the board MVP as I'd ever be willing to bet.
Okay.
And that is Deebo Samuel.
Interesting. He's he's around plus 3,300 is what I got here for Deebo.
Yeah. So you're getting 33-1, which is pretty damn good. It is hard in some respects for a wide receiver to win the MVP award. Although I think like a quarter of the last 16 years of MVPs have been wide receivers. Deebo gives you probably the wide receiver most likely to have a big game for the Niners. And secondly, a guy who can score a touchdown in the run game.
Right. That's obviously, he gives you the run game bonus there a little bit.
And that's the thing, is it's hard for a wide receiver to win because usually if they have that good of a game, the quarterback wins.
Right. That's what I was thinking about, like Kelsey. Like, I don't see any scenario in which Kelsey catches three touchdown passes and they don't give it to Patrick Mahomes, right?
But if Deebo catches one and has, you know, five catches, 70 yards and a touchdown plus a 35-yard touchdown run, boom. Yep. I think Deebo jumps into the conversation, you know, especially if that touchdown run involves him like trucking somebody, which is very, very possible.
Yeah. My further down the board pick is Nick Bosa, who's anywhere from 2,500 to 3,300, depending on where you go.
It's even harder for pass rushers to win than it is for wide receivers, though.
And it does happen less often, I think.
And without the Chiefs being held to a surprisingly low point total, it's hard for me to imagine that. And secondly, and this is always the gamble, here's the problem with that. Nick Bosa could be the best player on the field, have six pressures, no sacks, and not even get considered.
Yeah, it's possible.
Like, he has to get sacks specifically, which Patrick Mahomes is incredibly difficult to sack. And also, sometimes, maybe even more often than not, when he is sacked, it's not the first guy that gets him.
If you favor the Chiefs defense, Honey Badger's a deep flyer at plus 6,000.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good deep flyer just in terms of if you think Jimmy G is going to have to throw it, and if he throws it a lot, he's more risky, and Honey Badger is an opportunist.
Yeah, indeed. I may have some actual prop bets going this year. I'm ready for that. I'm going to need some. Like I said, we talked about earlier, I'm a neutral in this game. I'd be happy for either team. So I'm kind of mostly just rooting for a good game, but that is an ideal setup to just sort of get some action going.
Always good to juice it up when you're not invested heavily in either side.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's talk about homework because we need to get out of here.
Since you said that, I just want to say, I've already tweeted this, but, let's put it on the podcast record as well. Monday's headline, if the 49ers win, let's talk about six, baby.
You think?
It's their sixth ring.
Yeah.
Let's talk about six, baby. Sub-headline, all the good things and the bad things that made Super Bowl 54.
I mean, we didn't get that last year when the Patriots won six, right?
All the good things and the bad things. I can't help it if New England headline writers are not creative.
You just want to do the song. That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, I thought of what's the best sex song pun to use in a headline, and that's it.
Yeah. So I'm just going to say right now, I didn't write it down in the homework that we talked about.
Of course you didn't.
Yet again.
I do know that we had a couple of Netflix shows, right? Cheer.
Yes, we're going to watch Cheer. That's the one everyone's talking about. McMillions on HBO, which is the story of the McDonald's Monopoly heist that premieres on Monday night. We're trying to keep it light this week.
There was something else, though.
So Cheer, McMillions.
Was it something on Netflix?
It was not something on Netflix.
Oh, I know. It's Amazon. Troop Zero.
Oh, Troop Zero. That's right.
Yeah, and we don't know really anything about this, but the cast looks really good, and it looks like a funny thing about, like, camp or Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or something.
Yeah. Should we also throw in Miracle Workers Dark Ages that we were supposed to watch last week and I think both of us forgot about?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, we should.
All right, so let's try to get caught up on that. And then I'm just going to throw this out there. It's not for homework because Kolsky's already out. And I don't know what kind of discussion we would have, but BoJack Horseman drops its final episodes. They're currently sitting at 97% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
And to be clear, I'm not opposed. I'm just not in.
And I just think it's one of the great TV shows of this decade. And if you're in it at all, you're probably already watching it, so you don't need to hear that from me. Oh, and then we also forgot The Good Place is wrapping up tonight.
Yeah.
So we'll
finale
have a
of The Good Place
postmortem of that as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe it's over.
I kind of can believe it's over. I mean, they've been sort of running to it for for a little bit here. And you know what? The Mike Schur shows tend to have, like, they tend to sort of cap them. You know what I mean? I think they think about a way out. So
he likes a real ending.
Yeah. And this show in particular, I felt like is one that sort of almost demands it. You know what I mean?
Agreed. I have high expectations.
So, yeah. And I want to say that that's an extra long one tonight.
I hope
but
so.
I could be wrong about that. So
fingers crossed.
All right. And I think that's it. We need to go.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.